Welcome to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Shani Lehre and Nicholas Yanni. And we're talking because they've come together to create a program which is actually beginning on Monday the 19th, pretty soon. It's called From Radical Uncertainty to Radical Creativity. And that really grabbed a hold of me because of the times we find ourselves in. And that's what we'll talk about today. We'll talk about the threshold that Nicholas and Shani see that we stand inside of. And we'll talk about what possibilities for transformation and breakthrough actually lie within the pressure of these times and how we can retrain our nervous system to expand and to lead and to access a different kind of creativity. So in a sense, we're talking about the journey that participants in this program will go on. And they've been very generous to offer an early bird code for our community. If you're interested after listening to this and you're inspired to join the program, you can head to the show notes and you'll find an early bird coupon code there that you can use to sign up. You'll find the link to the page, the enrollment page there as well. Shani is a consultant to world leaders and global entrepreneurs, the founder of Business Sanctum and the creator of the Inner Geopolitics Method. Nicholas Yanni is doing deep transformational coaching with leaders around the world, with executives, with CEOs. He is also the author of Leader as Healer, which was the winner of the Business Book of the Year Award 2023. So we're in capable hands. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Shani and Nicholas. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Shani, Nicholas, I'm delighted to be with you both. And even more excited now we've had the chance to check in. And so we're having this conversation because you're about to begin a program, which I think is deeply attuned to our times, and we're going to explore the program itself and why you created it. The program is called From Radical Uncertainty to Radical Creativity. Could you say something about, and I'll let either one of you pick this up, but could you say something about why you've created this program, why you feel what you'll do in it is relevant for our times? So maybe you could speak to what are the times we find ourselves in. You even use the word threshold. Maybe name this threshold and the invitation of our times.
Well, first of all, Joel, thank you for inviting us. It's a real pleasure to be here. And you hit the nail on the head. I think we are at what people are calling a civilizational inflection point, and one that was foretold and foreseen by many of the old wisdom traditions. I was just looking at that this morning. And I think we are literally between two paradigms. And we have an old paradigm, which is thinking dominated, linear dominated, world as mechanism dominated. And it's been around for several hundred years, certainly in the Western world. It dominates business, it dominates everything, really. And it's clearly leading us into more and more catastrophe, as we see. And at the same time now, there is more than ever an awakening of a very, very different, actually radically different consciousness, a whole way of being in the world, which is much more unified in terms of body, heart, mind, soul, and spirit, and has a connection to a much, much wider field, which in the traditions would have been called unitive consciousness, and sometimes now called heart intelligence. And I really do see and feel that we are at that time. And the new consciousness, which in some ways is very old, but is also a new integration of left and right brain, rationality and intuition and so on, it's waking up very clearly. And the contrast between the two is very vivid. And what we would call the new one, and this is where it's been so exciting for me to work with Shani. I don't often co-lead, but it's an amazing journey with Shani. The new one is much closer to what I think we would call the original blueprint of what the human being is supposed to be. And it's like we've veered very far from that. I call it exile sometimes. I ran a program last year called Returning from Exile. And I think we've normalized this huge exile, which has at the core of it immense suffering and loneliness and isolation, because it is fundamentally disconnected. So I work, you know, like you do with senior leaders. Most leaders I work with, they have no sense of their body. They're disconnected from their emotions. I ask a group of senior leaders, you know what it means to be in flow, right? You've experienced flow. Yeah. And what? How is it? It's ease, it's creativity, it's connection. And then I say, so what percentage of each day do you live in flow? 5%. That's what we've normalized. Flow, what we call flow, is much closer to our deep original imprint. So this program that we're offering is because from the old paradigm, radical uncertainty is very problematic because it doesn't bend control. And the old paradigm is based on, with my thinking, I control everything. So every business person I speak to is saying the old ways are not working, and it's very, very stressful because we don't know anything different. from a newer paradigm, from a much deeper essence of who we are, radical uncertainty is a wonderful gateway. It's a more deeply natural state of things. And if we flow with that, we move into radical creativity as joy. As joy, as abundance. We can also speak of it as a move from scarcity to abundance. So we're talking about not just improving something, and this is, you know, at the core of my teaching as well. We're talking about a complete upgrade to a new way of being. And I really believe that's what the times are calling us to. It's very clear. And I think it's an extraordinary time to be alive. Shanice.
Yes. Thank you. First of all, thank you, Joel, for having us. And Nicholas, echoing everything you've said, I feel like I want to zoom in to the word exile. And, you know, we created the program because radical uncertainty can be perceived or can be understood in two ways. And this is so true for so many of the words we use on a day-to-day basis. They can, you know, there's the enlightened side of it, and then there's the one that costs us our well-being. Mm-hmm. And so radical uncertainty, we could say, okay, the times on earth right now are uncertain. We don't know what's happening politically, geopolitically, in the natural world, you know, organizations that we've relied on are falling apart, breaking apart, ways, old ways of thinking. And so that is one thing. And so we can say that the root, or we've found together that, you know, the root of radical uncertainty in that way that I've just defined is our inner exile, our forgetting who we are. Because what we are observing outside of us right now in the world is very much a result of a way that has not been working. And so, you know, Einstein said this, we can't do the same things and expect different results. So how do we look at this and say, okay, radical uncertainty may mean to release the certainty we had in the old ways. Mm-hmm. And from that, remember, what are the ways that actually sustain our well-being, sustain our lives physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and thereby bring the inevitable result of radical creativity? And of a creativity that is such that it brings thriving life to everything and everyone that embodies it, and to everything and everyone that embodiment touches outside of us. And so, you know, in a nutshell, from radical uncertainty to radical creativity is a deep questioning of what we've put our certainty on, realization that maybe that's not so certain actually, embracing the uncertainty of an ability to trust in a process that is actually bigger than what my mind can conceive of. And is this that runs life? And this that makes my cells grow again and again, my hair grow, my eyes shine, the trees grow. And maybe trust, and putting our trust and our investment of energy in that type of uncertainty to maybe meet what true certainty means, and to maybe meet what actual creativity means. Because who said creativity is just what I create in front of me? Maybe creativity is the fact that my creation becomes a co-creative force in more creativity.
Beautiful. Before we talk, I mean, it's very evocative what you share with me. And before we talk about the pathway or the process of, you know, being able to access this kind of certainty or creativity, could you say a little bit more about what it's like, that this place, this This place you say bigger, like opening to something bigger than the self. It sounds like it's a place of deep interconnectivity or intimacy with life. You've named the original blueprint. Could you give us flesh out this sense of our essence? So this is a word I've seen you use with this program. What it's like to live in that place or open into that place? What is this place like? Yeah.
I can give a really relevant example. I had some really great tests done recently. These are live blood, look at everything that's happening inside and realize the absolute power of life, knowing that we have many, many trillions of cells and nobody's micromanaging them to tell them what to do. And yet they each know what to do because the liver cell and the heart cell are not competing for who is going to be better and more recognized and loved more and seen more in the news as being the one that is the one that has kept me alive. But they, in some kind of co-creative dance, are each doing their magic. And I feel like part of the answer to your question is what if this was true? It's not what if. In my experience, and I know Nicholas too, is, and of course Nicholas will speak about it for his own himself. But the each of us have this inherent superpower, this inherent reason or meaning of being, and one of us is an extraordinary painter, and one is a writer, and one is a business builder, and one is a country builder, and one loves to create things or to take care of spaces. Or, and part of our divorce from our who we are is, in a way, a frantic way of wanting to micromanage what I need to do, but also what others are doing. And the liver and the heart cells are competing in a way in our world, in the external world, if we will. Does that answer a bit of the question, Joel?
So what I'm hearing is there's like as I hear you speak, there's a uniqueness that can shine through to the expression of our essence, that each of us has something, a gift to offer. I'm also getting a sense that maybe this is a process of stripping away the veils to trusting in the intelligence of life and participating in that, and that actually maybe it's actually more important to that. That's where we actually focus first, because what you're naming, Shani, where otherwise we're trying to control our experience or guard against life, and so we're not open to that process that you're talking about.
So let me say a couple of things, because I was going to go where you're saying also, Joe. But to respond to your first question, because it's really right at the core of this, and it's right at the core of, for instance, how I train coaches and how I work with leaders. And let's make it very practical. A leader goes into a meeting with somebody, one of their top team, or is that, and I speak to you, let's say you're the leader, and I ask you, Joel, so when you go into that meeting, what kind of perceptual field are you in? Are you mainly thinking about the outcomes you want? Or are you present in your body, meaning you feel connected in your body? Are you feeling the whole interior of this person? Are you feeling the whole ecosystem in which this person is living? So are all your intelligences open? That's the very kind of, I was working with a very senior leader on this recently, for 2 days actually. And this was like a core topic. Where are you? What's your quality of presence? And it really landed. He completely got what we were talking about. So this is an example of where am I moment to moment? Where am I moment to moment? I'm fortunate I live with 60 olive trees here. If I walk out of my door here, am I lost in my own thinking world? Or do I go out and basically be in a state of wonder within which thinking is happening, but my body, heart, and soul are open to a very, very, very different experience of what we call reality? And even again, if we go back to I like to make this very practical. Because I often say to a leader, so you walk down a street and then you go into your gym or exercise, whatever you do, and you do an hour and you come out to the same street, but it's totally, your whole experience of it is totally different. Because your whole inner energy flow, your whole activation of your energy flow has changed. And in that moment, reality is more vivid. You feel more alive. People pass. You begin to feel them more. So you ask about how does it feel? That's what we're talking about. And then, of course, within that, we then need absolutely, and we're dealing with this in our program. So we need to look. We need to understand, and even more or equally importantly, feel how the old programming that keeps us in this very limited identity sits inside us. And it sits inside us at multiple levels, right down to the core nervous system.
And
And we need to feel right into that. Yeah.
causes the feeling of uncertainty while actually
Yeah.
being rooted in a
Yeah.
trust.
Yeah. Because we're then fundamentally in separation from everything. And at the core of that is huge anxiety and fear and isolation. Because when we're not rooted in a deeper essence, we're mostly in fear. And therefore, try to control everything in order not to feel fear. And you and I know in our work, and Janine knows that when we help someone, for instance, on a very simple level, just feel your fear for a moment. Let's stop talking about it. Let's just feel it for a moment. And someone says, okay, yes, all right, let's breathe into the fear. After 5 minutes, they feel so open. But these fears, these programs sit deep within us. I mean, I'm working on mine forever. So I could give you a personal example just from yesterday. You were saying about anxiety, sometimes you wake up with, and so do I. And yesterday, something very vivid came to, and I was feeling a certain program so deep in my nervous system in a way I never have before. And I just breathed into it, spoke with my wife, and there was like a melting in me. And I thought, wow, because this is the thing, and we know this in developmental psychology, until we know a program is there, we don't know. We just are operating, right? And we don't realize that there's a whole veil here between me and unity. And once we do see it or feel it or name it, its subject is already becoming object. But object needs to be felt right in our nervous system.
Do you want to add anything to that, Shani? I have a question bubbling up, but I'd love to
Please,
give you.
please. I it's
Yeah. The question that arises is, as you speak to this, Nicholas as well, like, and Shani, like, what this process of how we can become aware. So you said, like, yeah, it's actually often subconscious or unconscious. So, we just think this is who we are or the way the world
Exactly.
is. Is it, and then, so what's the process of bringing what was unconscious into awareness, and then how can
Dude.
we be with it in a way that allows it to integrate or to heal?
That's a great question. And I would say first, like Nicholas said, is becoming aware of it. And the awareness lives in more than one place. It lives in the body, and in because the body holds trauma and subconscious auto-conditioned ways in which our hormones even fire to take us somewhere. I realize we have bacteria and viruses and all the kinds of things living in our body that actually define a lot of what is happening with our choices. So first of all, it's the awareness in the body, and then there's also an awareness of these, and you mentioned them, Joel, is of how I think the world is. And there's first a willingness. It's what did I learn to believe about myself? I am that. You hear people saying, this is the way I am. I won't change. That's the way. So when people say that's the way, that there's no way to work with them because am I willing to re-question all of my full stops and my exclamation marks on this is how the world is, this is how I am, this is how it should be? And so first of all, it's are you willing? So are you willing to stop for a moment before reacting in anger or fear or going to your addiction, be it Instagram or speaking for myself, Instagram or food or sugar or sex or and fill in the blanks. Are you willing to feel for a moment and hold the auto reaction into the space where you actually start becoming sovereign and being in charge of what happens next? And are you willing, when someone brings up an idea or a political stance or says something about you or gives you a feedback, are you willing to, before either shutting down or running to answer and explain and give justifications, are you willing to stop for a moment and witness what has been thought that is taking me into this auto reaction? Now, a lot of what I'm witnessing in the world right now is a reaction or an answer to many people not stopping and asking and questioning and contemplating and just action on action on action, where there has actually not been space to unwind these programs, and then the programs continue to perpetuate themselves, if that makes sense. So, first step is stop. Now, stop doesn't mean I'm going to stop working and stop doing and stop living. It actually means let's bring out the grown-up in me and take charge and listen to the child and what it's wanting to do and how it's wanting to immediately react first. Then it is willing to go through a bit of a maybe potentially discomfort because it's not comfortable to stop in your fear before acting out on it. It's not comfortable to question long, deep-rooted, sometimes ancestral beliefs about how the world functions and not lash out at someone at the dinner table or on a political situation that's happening. It's very difficult to stop and say, wait, maybe I can look at this in more than one way. Now, much deeper is look at myself in more than one way, in more than this that has been said to me since I was a little child, or has been said to my mother about how women should be, or my father about how men should behave, or how this is. And then after we've stopped and we've looked, it is okay, what do I want to keep? What is serving me, life? And what is not? And how do I now decide to give new life and new energy into, or actually old energy, to put energy into retraining myself? Because the body reacts automatically, the tongue reacts automatically, The nervous system, the emotional realms, they're just on autopilot mostly. Am I willing to train and retrain myself in a path that is healthier for me and for those in my circle, for those I serve as a leader, for the country I serve as a leader? And I've had the privilege of seeing great leaders very courageously asking these questions at the core level of self, and then saying, oh my goodness gracious me, everything has been running from that program. Everything I touch, from my family to my business to my policies, has been running from the me out, from that protective mechanism of trying to hold on to a program that is not actually who I truly am. And that is a decision of I'm going to retrain my mind and my nervous system to act differently. And then once that's integrated, and of course, this all happens in motion. I'm not asking people to go on 5 years and sit on a mountain and make a new self. No, it's not necessary. This is a time where we are needed, actually, in our grown-upness, in our healthy grown-up. And then, how does that serve? How do I put that into good use, more than just for myself?
Before you may jump in here, Nicholas, if I could just ask a question. Well,
Please.
one reflection is, so our times feel particularly potent for being a kind of dojo, that's having us have to look at ourselves. And because there's so much uncertainty, as you've named, that it's maybe that's the gift of our times, that it's actually highlighting the way we've been inhabiting the world and ourselves. But my question as well is, how do we make sure that that choice, that decision to do something differently, doesn't arise out of a kind of sense of resistance or reaction to what we so I notice, like, parts can often polarize, so one part doesn't want something and or wants something the other part does. And how do we make sure that that decision is coming out of a different place that doesn't reinforce our patterning?
I have good
It's
news
such a
for
beautiful question.
that. It's amazing.
Go on, go on, Shani.
And I have good news and bad news. So bad
Yeah.
news. The bad news is we will never be sure. As long as this, as we live in this world, part of the game, if you will, or the learning, or the way we learn, is through trial and error, is through, being on the dance floor and, learning where to put my foot and where does it hurt when I put my foot there, and if I put my foot in another place, it suddenly becomes a beautiful dance. So this is an inherent part of uncertainty. And there are ways to practice discernment. So of course, we're not going to now turn around and make all of the parts or all of who we were yesterday wrong in order to bring a new one to be right. That's not the new program. What it is, more than anything, is creating the environment internally and externally. This is what I can do to facilitate the most certain within the uncertain of connection with self. So this is being an inquisitive parent to an internal child, rather than a corrective, I know better than you way of being. Now, I hope it gives a bit to the answer. Because certainty we will never really have in an ever-changing world where we're not in control of all things. But what we can do is decide to show up in the dojo and train without making the one that's not training or my lazy part wrong, just seeing it and loving it. And then, come on, let's do it anyway. Let's, come on, we can do it. Kind of energy. Is this fail safe? No. Will this, and this is from 20 years of experience with leaders too, is will this make the pain less, or help me live in a place where when I meet the pains of life, I am still able to access the joys of the growth in it. Yes. Please,
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, no, it's such a great question and also answer that you gave, Shani. I would say for myself, it's really about listening to the frequency I'm in and how deep, actually how deep is, it might sound whatever it sounds like, but how deep am I coming from love? How deep am I holding this whole situation in a frequency of love? And how much am I needing to somehow speak from my little identity, which will have reactions? And, you know, for me, that's obviously an ongoing journey. But if I'm willing to stop in the way Shani said and really look, that's one of my most reliable reference points, because I know the difference in myself. For sure, I know the difference.
Because one of the things that I wrote down from the course was the description was recognizing where we speak from. How can we distinguish our essence
that's what I'm
from
talking
our egoic self? And so sounds like you're saying, you can really tell the difference between, I think, of course, I think most people listening will recognize, you know,
I think so
you
too.
Know, I can,
yeah.
Tell when, I mean, there's a lot of reactivity here.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And then if we add to that what I was saying before about how am I literally moving through my everyday, anyone I meet, how much am I really available for them, and not judging, actually meeting and curious and loving to meet you and hear about you. And these are all reference points by which we know how much we're in our smaller identity, which is always polarized. Our identity always creates polarization, whereas the deeper field, whether we call it the unitive field or the heart field, is fundamentally beyond identity. And that's also, you know, all traditions, all paths have always spoken of this. So it's, but we're living at a time now where, as the old tradition said, we're at a kind of junction point. Humanity is at a junction point. And I feel it happening in a very quickening way in myself, for instance, and in the groups I'm running. And I, you know, it is the multi-level. Even last night, I was working with one of my advanced training teams, and I was supervising a very experienced coach. And he brought a client situation. And at one point, I just asked him a question about, have you asked your client this? He went through, like, he, after 5 minutes, said, this is completely mind-blowing, because my whole belief system was I would never ask that of a client. That's a really good example of a unconscious belief system that was running the whole way he functioned. And just with a simple question, because I could feel the client and what he needed to ask her, and it just opened his whole worldview. Lovely example of a belief system running the show.
Yeah, yes. And maybe adding a few words to that is, you know, in essence, the quicker, and quicker is tricky also in time, but I would say something that I find very helpful in distinguishing between the ego and the voice of the ego and the voice of my higher, more life-giving self, would be to ask, why? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I defending the position I'm defending? Who's doing? So Nicholas spoke before about where am I? I would say, where am I and when am I? Am I in my childhood pattern here? Is this daddy in front of me in the boardroom that I'm speaking to or trying to prove something to? Or is this mom? You know, and so many times you can exchange the faces and the fights in boardrooms and in the UN on policy meetings will be the little boys, often now in this time, fighting each other for who's going to be top dog. And this is not, you know, and then when you ask why deeper, it's about me and how I am perceived and how I look and how I, you know, and how I am loved or not loved. And whenever that I is there, it's mostly off. It's mostly the egoic voice speaking. So the why am I acting? The why am I doing? You know, why? But really why? And that's part of the training we offer will be that, will be, you know, let's find the but truly courageously, because ego wants to polarize, as Nicholas said. Ego is all about fear, doubt, and judgment. Let's divide and conquer. Because when I divide and conquer, I can control that part of you that I don't want to bring to the table, that is shameful, that is not acceptable. And so if that is there, and the why is because I'm defending something in myself, because I need to show up like something, because I want you to think something, then I'm already off. Then the whole line of energy of that decision, of that policy, of that next step in my life is standing on a foundation of ego. And we usually, and it's very interesting to look at family businesses and generational businesses that go through, at some point, it will break when it's made on the foundation of ego. And we are witnessing right now in the world a lot of that breakage that has been built, in my humble opinion. And working, again, working with the world leaders, it's very interesting to see. We are watching a system crumble because it has been built on foundations of ego. Now, is that wrong? No. That is an opportunity for growth. Now, amazing, fantastic, great news. Let us see and remember what is beyond that mask of division and conquering. What is beyond the me of the past coming to the table, or the me of a desired future because of how it will look, so I'm going to rewrite history a bit. But rather than that, what is the truth right now? What is here right now? And how can I, as a leader, come to the table with my pain and my vulnerability and my ability to lead too? Or my insight and foresight, etc.
I've got so many questions bubbling up. I want to ask you in a moment about the relationship between healing and purpose and creativity. But
fantastic.
Before I do that, some people listening, and I know, you know, this is what comes up for me as you talk, Shani and Nicholas, about the kind of leadership that can emerge in working with leaders. But then I just think about what I see happening right now in mainstream news, and it feels so far away from that. And, you know, we've already named that actually, you know, one of the tendencies in times like these is people kind of double down and get more reactive. But
yeah,
something I've been thinking about, and we've talked about on the podcast, is how and when and where will our field really have impact on the global geopolitical structures, you know? And maybe it's the wrong way to think about it. Maybe it's a bottom-up kind of shift that's going to take place. But you know, I think a lot of people will be going, this sounds great, but a lot of leaders I see, political leaders, don't seem to be leading from this place. Maybe that's strong. Maybe I'm being very generalistic, and maybe there are a lot of leaders out there who are coming from this
I have
place.
One sentence on that, and I'd love to hand that to Nicholas.
Yeah.
The one sentence is, It takes very little light in a dark room to turn the light on. So, and what I am seeing on the news is a lot of the energy. We have a lot of past trauma in my way of calling it. It's a lot of that past egoic trauma coming up for freedom and making itself so known that we cannot deny it anymore. That the illusion, the veil of illusion becomes lifted because thank you very much to those world leaders that show us illusion so clearly so that we can choose to ask deeper questions. And the leaders that are asking the deeper questions are coming. They're right there, right behind, and they're emerging. And it won't take many of those to turn on the light. It was a long sentence, sorry, but
So, yeah, thank you. I think because, like, someone wrote to me recently, are you optimistic about the world and where we're going? And when someone asks me that, it's always been like that. It's like I can't speak to the mindset from which that's coming. And there are different ways. I think Vaclav Havel once said, Vaclav Havel said something beautiful about hope is not about how things are going to turn out. Hope is doing what you know is the right thing to do because we don't know what's going to unfold. We can't possibly know, but we can know what Shani said, for instance, that small, what look like small amounts of light can have huge impact. And what you said is true, Joel, that mostly what the media presents and what we meet a lot is the old paradigm. But we also know it's like what Joanna Macy called the great unraveling, and it's most likely going to get more and more messy and more pain-filled and chaotic. And if we look at an individual's journey, that's often true. When an individual is close to real transformation, it can be really chaotic and messy. I know it in myself too, and dark. It's like the light goes off. So I do think that's what's happening globally. So I really stay open to all the news and sometimes cry my heart out, like this ice age and shooting a poet called Good and what he said to her. When someone told me the other day what he said to her just after he shot her, I don't even want to repeat it here. I literally just sat and cried. So I think we have to really feel all that, but not be transfixed by it. It's very important to feel it, otherwise we go numb. My heart goes numb. But I'm not transfixed by that because I feel such a strong connection to a deeper awakening that's happening. And I have no idea how that will play out, and I don't need to know how that will play out. I just know that that's the right thing that is happening now. So I'm not bothered so much with, well, how long will it take or how many people need to wake up? Does that make sense?
It does and makes me think of how these are soul-making times in a sense of, the extraordinary acts, for example, around the world wars that have taken place, and there's some of the things, the extraordinary things that people do. And so, in response, I mean, like acts of just astounding compassion and courage. And it's interesting because I was once on a call with Joanna Macy, and there was only about six of us on this call, and she offered a transmission to me, to us on the call, where somebody asked her, how do we respond in these times? And she said, well, something to the effect of like when the ship goes down, and she wasn't literally meaning everything's going to collapse, but she said it's time to celebrate. But the it's time to party, not like hedonistically, but to celebrate life and our humanity, the shine, the radiance in our eyes. And was it'll never leave me. And so I guess this comes back to this question of like the relationship between healing and our expression of creativity, our capacity to move with the creative unfolding of life. And often, Shanna, you mentioned earlier that we can begin to land inside of our own unique kind of expression of life through us. Could you say something about, so I'm hearing like one thing is the awareness of our patterns and our beliefs, and then it's important to not make those wrong, but actually love those, include those. Could you talk about this relationship between healing and purpose
And awakening,
and
healing and
awakening
awakening.
and the journey?
Well, they're totally intertwined because we're talking about coming back to our deepest essence. We're not even coming back to it. That's the wrong word. It's coming into our deepest essence. And that, you see, okay, I'm going to read you something here because I had a dialogue recently with one of my CEO clients who's in charge of over 100,000 people. And we've done deep healing and awakening work, really. And he asked me, are you optimistic? And I said, I want to ask you a question before I answer. And my question to him that I wrote was, I said, when you're in states of deep flow and you know what they are, and I know he knows what they are, what's your answer to whether you're optimistic or pessimistic? And he wrote the most beautiful text. He said, at one level, the question disappears. The spaciousness is what I notice, and not some time-based future concern. On another level, there's a sense of the beauty and fragility of human experience. And thirdly, the insights or residue that come from those experiences deepen my resolve to use my leadership platform in service of humanity. I got chills just reading that because we're both totally convinced that in our natural essence, that it, for all of us, is unfolding more and more deeply, there is an inherently natural purpose to give and contribute, and that will be unique for each of us. As Shani said, someone needs to build furniture, someone needs to run a country, someone needs to cook very well. But there is, in our deepest natural flow, there is purpose. And it's not even something we think about, it just arises as part of our essential being in the world. It's very clear, and it's very beautiful because when we connect with that as well, there's no stress. There's no stress. It's not like, oh my God, I have to fulfill my purpose. No, it's natural expression of who I am in my core. And what's also interesting, and I've really seen this in myself, that let's say for me, I've known for many, many years in a way what my core purpose is. But then I also see how my egoic self has often latched onto that and in a way used it for its own ends. That's a very interesting part of our development, which is why we have to keep working on the healing part, the dissolving of the inclusion of these more selfish, self-centered impulses. But the core essence I've known for a long time. And the more that there is the inner work, the more the natural essence deepens, gets stronger, and has no stress about it, and more impact in the world. No stress. Wow, that's a big deal. That's a very, very big deal. When we really begin to feel into what level of stress is in my nervous system, deep, deep down, that most of the time I'm so busy that I definitely don't have time to notice, which is why the stop that Shani mentioned earlier is so critical.
And thank you, right, Nicholas, to that pain or to that stress, because thanks to the fact that the boat is sinking, I know that there is something to address.
Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Fantastic. Great.
Exactly.
Rather than, oh
Exactly.
my God, give me a pill to fix it. And
Yes.
sometimes a pill is needed to help with a pain. But rather than finding the quick fixes, let's keep going. Let's do something quickly. And I'm giving the energy of it while I say this. Let's be quickly. Rather than doing that, it's like, wow, look at that. My body is amazing. It tells me when something's off. It brings pain, it brings fever, it brings. My soul tells me when something's off. It gives me stress. It gives me sleepless nights, etc., etc. So I know there's something to address. Rather than taking a sleeping pill, maybe first ask myself, why am I not sleeping well at night? What are the thoughts that are keeping me up? When I'm in the boardroom and making a big decision, rather than running to the decision because not deciding is too painful and I can't feel myself and I need to do something very quickly. Can you feel the energy of that? Whoa, I'm running to sign this deal off right now. What if I could take a breath and ask myself, who's wanting to sign this and why? In me. And is it for the greater good, or is this going to make a terrible chaos in the future, even though right now I can't see it because it's not right in front of my nose? It's only in 5 years.
And at least that chaos will mean I don't have to feel
If not
my
mine, I will be someone else because I won't be the CEO anymore at that time, or I won't be the country leader anymore at that time,
But
etc.
at least I won't have to feel my
I don't.
level of anxiety.
Exactly. And that's where. Can we use the pain of this time? Can we use the uncertainty of this time? And we can, which is why we're putting up this course really, is, how can we use the energy that's being offered to us in this challenging? I mean, let's face it, we are in one boat. It is very discombobulating to our system when systems are not peaceful around us. It does affect us. Great. What is my peace here? What is my peace, but also what is my peace?
I'd love to ask you about structure here. Shani, you also mentioned how our, and I think Nicholas, you've said this too, like how our inner and outer world, reflect each other, or our outer world reflects our inner world back to us. One thing I know you're going to talk about, or at least is named, is structures and rituals and rhythms that can free our energy. And I think that's really powerful to consider that. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because let me just add one sentence, which is, I think what's going to be emerging in our field more is a recognition of how the inner and outer is not separate. And that goes both ways, yeah? So, I mean, a lot of the old school, or traditionally, we didn't do any inner work, but also, sometimes I think our field can bias the inner work and somehow create this sense that the inner is actually separate from the outer, that but that separation is illusory. And so could you say something about, I mean, you could say anything about what I respond to anything I just said, but also these structures that and rituals and rhythms that can help us liberate our creativity.
Without sharing them all online right now, how can we do that, Nicholas? I
Or
would
maybe talk
say.
about the importance of structure and rhythm as well.
And that, by the way, that's a beautiful example just there of a way of thinking that you hear in some people. Oh, it's self-indulgent if I put all this energy into my inner development. That's a thought form that needs to really be questioned and actually even completely opened up into actually. I'm self-indulgent as a leader if I don't really do my inner work. Because
Well,
what am I transmitting? What am I transmitting into the world? But I think without going into too much detail, I know one of the things we hold in the work we're going to be doing is that two things are at the core. One is to question every single one of my beliefs about reality and myself. And the second is to be willing to feel everything.
And there are practices for that. I mean, I would love if we had 3 hours, we could do some now. But I feel, to your previous question, there is a very serious element of healing here, which is healing in, and I would call healing, healing as a remembrance strategy, as a strategy to remember, as a soothing of the autopilot. Say, wait, 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 there is more. There is more to your reality than you've allowed in for very good reasons up to this point. And let's try it on. And so we will be practicing the trying on for size, new ways through exercises for the mind, through exercises with the body, and through a lot of mental work too. Because a lot of the blocks are in the start in the mental and then become anchored in the body, to rewrite or recode or go back to the original code. That was it's almost like there's an AI, there's a system. We've come with a program, and then there are viruses that have come up and stopped the original program from actually being able to express itself. Now, the thing is that program is really strong. So the light of our soul, I like to call it, is very strong. So it will find its way through in one way or another, through the cracks. And if we don't wake up to it, then it will hurt on the way out, which we're witnessing collectively maybe at this point in time. So it wants out. Truth wants out, your truth wants out, your who you are in collaboration with all of the rest of life wants to be out in the world. And so, if you don't allow space for it, it will make you sick, make you angry, make you sad, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, healing and working the insides of ourselves, all the while being in the world. So the one, as you say, Joel, works with the other. This is not, I'm going to be a monk on a mountain because I can only do either my own spirit or my matter or my material world, but rather they are interrelated, interconnected. We live, so the one is going to feed the other. And through it, I will learn and grow and remember and amplify and evolve myself, my life, and life around me, not as a someone doing it, as the natural state of flow of what my soul is and what your soul is and what everybody listening to this podcast soul is and those not listening too.
Beautiful.
Yes. And maybe just to give a little bit more detail for you and for anyone who's listening. We have these four sessions and they'll be very structured and there'll be strong input, which will invite real deep questioning. There will be exercises together. There will be dialogue together. And then there will be homework, real deep inquiry in the homework. So what we can say is we're activating a multi-level field. And I love what Shani said about our soul light is wanting to come through. And we feel very strongly, I think we know in the other work we do, that when a strong field gets activated, a lot can happen. A lot can happen in much less time than we think through a multi-level approach, mental, emotional, somatic, soul. So we're in the very much the last kind of design of it now. So we know that there'll be all these levels will be opened and that anyone who comes is anyway ready in one
Right.
way.
And there's a
So,
place for disclaimer. There's a disclaimer, right, Nicholas? And the disclaimer is, this is not for people who want plasters over their pain. It's not for people who want quick fixes. This is for I want to say, people who are ready to be both the warriors and the healers of their own light, to become stewards of their light and their light, and become warriors and healers of your own light as a service to the greater collective. And all of this without making it mean anything, and without having an ego that now I'm going to do my work because now I'm going to save the world. Not that either. So it's, this is in what is not able to be spoken, is the energy of you are your own healer, physician, heal thyself. And no warrior can say no to the parts of oneself that are no longer serving me. And obviously, they haven't been serving me or the world I'm living in right now, without the anger that comes with it, but rather with a very, like the mother, no. It's like, no, sorry, that's not acceptable behavior. This is, I love you, and we're going to raise our bar now and show up like we really can, and show up in kindness and in empowerment and in evolutionary force of creation. That.
I was going to ask you to share where we can find out about the course, but as you speak, I just want to name the masculine and feminine qualities of what you just named, which I really like too, because again, one without the other. I've been in like a self-development path, which is all about pushing through and just do it, and then I went into deep into healing. But then, hey, something, there was something about the masculine impeccability and showing up, which is really powerful. So I love to hear both of these coming together in what you reflect, that this deep love and inclusion and also taking a stand.
Yeah, I love how you name that. And I do feel very strongly that that's part of the next big evolutionary step is this higher and higher integration. We can call it left brain and right brain. We can call it divine masculine, divine feminine. And I love how you say that the dance together is absolutely critical. And that's one of the things we're finding as we work together and we look how our masculine, feminine energies work together, which sometimes are not, they're kind of almost reversed sometimes. Like sometimes it seems I hold more the deep feminine and Shani's very in the masculine, and then it can switch. And I think we hope also that in a way, we model that dance more and more as well.
The first of all, yes, it's a total delight to, because you, as we build and as this workshop has been built, we meet and we address, of course, as to model that within we, I don't believe that we can do anything. I always say, if any teacher tells you they've landed, run. Because as long as we have a body, we will be evolving and we will be growing, and there's always a deeper level. And even if I've healed so much in myself, there is still, it's still happening. And therefore, there is a responsibility. Marianne Williamson said this the other day. She said, it's time to say, okay, I've done a lot of inner work here, but come on, let me take you with me. And you can do it too. So that is a delight between Nicholas and I. It's been a total gift to share in this space, and I feel like we would probably be doing more of that. And back to the warrior and the healer, or the masculine and the feminine. A healer needs both, needs the warrior and the healer in themselves. And I give a very easy example for that one. So, for example, a healer is working with an addict. The addict needs the love, needs the light, needs the support, needs that, but also needs the, excuse me, sorry, if you're continuing on that path, I will not be able to help you anymore. And are you sure this is the way? Look in the mirror, darling. Excuse me, darling. And I've had this many times, you know, in my practice, where, you know, that healer needs to have a warrior that is able to, yes, bestow the extraordinary love, but also put a firm boundary where it's needed. And the warrior needs to be able to say, okay, now this needs to be done with. I am here to stop this inner evil from happening, or outer evil from happening. And yet, never in that will I be acting from hate,
exactly,
or from rage, or from the desire to end another thing, or another person, or another state, or another country. It will be out of love, because sometimes the only way is to say a very firm no, but it will never be with a closed heart.
Exactly.
It will always be with the grief of the need to bestow the firm boundary. It's like the mother to a child that wants something which is bad for them and needs to say no, but clearly no. There's no negotiating. It's no. And, but I want to give the child everything, but no, no. And so that is the dance between both. And Nicholas, you were mentioning how we play, you know, and we sometimes inverse roles. You know, sometimes I'm the one driving the, okay, next meeting needs to happen here and there and there. And then Nicholas, I need to feel into it, you know, or vice versa. Oh, I'm so sorry, I need to do my hair now. And, you know, so we play with that and delight in the ability to move in 360. To embody in every moment what is right and give the polarity, which then creates, because polarity is creative force on planet Earth. But polarity doesn't mean polarization and doesn't mean either or.
Right.
They come both to the table. They are all invited into the boardroom. They are all invited into the policy decisions on country and state level.
Yeah, and I mean, I know for sure, as I tread my own path, which sometimes seems slow and sometimes very quick, that the integration of love and fierceness gets ever stronger. And the more my heart is fully in the unitive field of love and care, the stronger I can be with people, and they absolutely take it. The warrior and the healer, the warrior and the healer, absolutely in higher and higher integration. That's our calling as well. All of us who want to have impact in the world, in whatever arena we're in.
I feel like there's a whole training in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, we'll be speaking into this very deeply.
That's the next course, you see.
Oh, it'll be part of this course.
Yeah, of course. I was joking.
Well, I'm delighted. I'll be joining you, and I'm looking forward to it very much. And maybe you could just let people know where we can find the program as well. People want to sign up, and you can also just share anything else about it that feels important to share as we wrap up.
So one thing I share, which I think is obvious, but it's good to say it, this is a time when groups need to work together. There's a force field when a group comes together with high intention that massively amplifies the developmental process.
Yeah. And again, for those who are not the faint of heart that want to plaster on their pain, for those who are willing to meet a next level of their ever-present joy and thriving reality with all of their parts, we'd love to welcome you, of course, and to work with you and to share with you and to grow with you. Because it's always a co-creation in these spaces, Nicholas says. And thank you so much, Joel, for giving the space and the time and your questions. And I can't wait to work with you in that space. And on a very practical note, where the course is to be found on soundsanctum.com/radical creativity. And we'll be, it's available there for anyone who feels called. We would love to work with you.
And it starts next Monday,
Yes, on the
the
19th of September.
19th, yeah. Four
We're
three
way
hour
ahead.
sessions, yeah.
Great. Yeah, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll link to the registration page on the show notes. Did you say Sound Sanctum?
Yes, it's
Dot com.
soundsanctum.com/radical creativity in one word.
Well, then, thank you, Shani,
Thank you,
for
Joel.
this. Yeah,
Thank
thanks for coming.
you. Yeah, thank you very much.
It's been a delight.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper, we've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.